Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. This week, hit piece NFTs spark a cease and desist frenzy. Welcome to Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. I'm Andy Malt. With me is Chris Cook. Hello, Chris.
Hello there.
As ever, we're going to be taking a look back at some of the biggest and most interesting music industry news stories of the last week. A week when that boycott of Spotify just got bigger, despite both Spotify and Joe Rogan responding to it and promising to do better.
Yeah, not long after we'd recorded last week's edition of Setlist, where we spoke about the Neil Young-sparked Spotify boycott, somewhat annoyingly, Spotify boss Daniel Ek and Joe Rogan himself took to the internet to respond to the whole thing, and they said various things that we kind of said they would probably say.
Yes.
So it didn't make our podcast wrong. It was just annoying that between us recording and publishing, quite a big development that happened in that story.
Yes, yes. And it meant that, yes, we spent the podcast saying they should do this when they already had. But, I mean, it was good that they did what we said, I guess.
Yeah, so Daniel Ek, the boss of Spotify, he basically said, actually, do you know what? We've got these great systems for dealing with things like misinformation, including COVID misinformation on our platform, but they've been secret so far. That's probably a bad thing. We're going to publish them. And even though our existing policies are brilliant, we're going to add another policy, which is whenever we have a podcast which complies with our policies but says something a bit controversial about COVID, we're going to signpost COVID resources that are endorsed by the scientific consensus. I mean, basically, what he was saying was, we're going to do everything that Twitter and Facebook and YouTube already does. Yeah. But for podcasts, was what he was saying.
Yes. And then Joe Rogan said that he would spend more time researching controversial guests so that he could challenge them on their views in real time. And he'd get guests with opposing views on the same episode rather than having them on weeks later, as is sometimes the case now, so that, you know, both sides are represented right there on that episode. So that, you know, these kind of controversial views aren't just left to float around in the air without anyone saying anything opposing them.
Now, we should note that X statement and Rogan's statement, both of which kind of came out at the same time on Sunday evening, as Andy was just finishing editing off last week's set list, they haven't really placated. Well, maybe it's not true to say they've not placated anyone. They've not placated anybody who had already hit out at Spotify and Joe Rogan over the alleged COVID misinformation in his podcast. So they didn't placate Neil Young, who'd already spoken. It didn't placate Joni Mitchell, who'd already spoken and pulled her content like Neil Young. And a bunch of other artists and indeed, you know, other creators on podcasts, comedians and other podcasters have since joined the boycott. So it didn't placate any of those people. Although I suppose what you'll never know is, were there any other bigger name, maybe more contemporary artists like we talked about last week, who were thinking of coming out against Joe Rogan and Spotify and were placated by those statements? We'll never know that, will we? So it's not entirely certain whether or not those statements worked. But what is certain is that the story didn't go away and the boycott has just grown in the subsequent week.
Yes, there were other artists who pulled their music off Spotify after those statements came out. Not always because of Joe Rogan. It sparked a bit of, you know, once Neil Young had gone off for his reasons for quitting, other artists came out and said, well, I don't like Joe Rogan, but actually this is what annoys me or concerns me about Spotify, and this is why I'm taking my content off. So it kind of got the ball rolling for other artists in other ways. But I mean, the particularly notable one last week were Young's former collaborators David Crosby, Stephen Stills and Graham Nash, who all announced together that they were pulling their music off Spotify in a statement saying, in solidarity with their bandmate Neil Young and in support of stopping harmful misinformation about COVID, they have decided to remove all their records from the streaming platform, including the recordings of Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young, Crosby, Stills and Nash, and Crosby and Nash, as well as Crosby and Stills' solo projects. Nash has already begun the process to take down his solo recordings.
as I alluded to, it wasn't just musicians who were joining the boycott, whether they were totally motivated by Joe Rogan and all of his COVID nonsense or any of the other criticisms that have been coming out of Spotify in this last week. So we started to see some comedians putting their content and some podcasters, including a Spotify-owned podcast. So a podcast called Science Versus, which is owned by Spotify's podcast studio in the US. Actually, the boss of that, or the producer, I should say, of that, she didn't say that she was going to stop putting her podcasts on Spotify, but she said that she was only going to be making podcasts which were addressing misinformation elsewhere on the Spotify platform. So Spotify Versus is a podcast where they basically take controversial statements and big talking points of the moment, and then they look at the data and what the science says, and they try to give a more sort of rational view of what's going on. And so the producer of that podcast said that she was a bit upset that Daniel Ek was standing up for Joe Rogan because she was very concerned about the COVID content that had been on some of his editions, and that actually that was concerning for her and her team. Yeah. And so she wasn't going to pull her content from Spotify. She can't really, because Spotify owns it. But she will only make podcasts moving forward which challenge misinformation elsewhere on the platform.
On top of all of that, Daniel Ek had to face questions from both his investors and his employees over the last week. Although, I mean, he pretty much said what he'd already said, like, our content policies are great, everything's fine. He did have to answer questions about what long-term impact this could all have on Spotify, but obviously his investors are very keen to know that, and he said that it was too soon to know, that it would take possibly months before any signs of any negative impact might be truly apparent. He sort of also said, you know, we've had problems in the past and it's all been fine. Nothing to worry about.
Which may or may not be true. Yeah, I guess from an investor's point of view, we know which artists and podcasters and comedians are pulling their content. But what actually matters is how many people are cancelling their subscriptions as a result of all of this. I've counted about 17 people in my social feeds who claim they've cancelled their Spotify subscriptions. Whether they really have, I don't know, because that actually seems like quite a lot of effort, doesn't it? Maybe I'm immoral and unethical. I don't know. I'm still a Spotify subscriber. Have you cancelled your Spotify subscription?
I haven't, but I have been trying Apple Music more in the last week, because I have subscriptions to both anyway.
Controversial. So,
well, I mean, that was partly just kind of after I said last week, like, Spotify seemed to be lagging behind technologically. I thought, well, yeah, why am I still listening to Spotify?
But yeah, the point is that the big unknown is behind the scenes, or a million people going to cancel their Spotify subscriptions in support of all of these artists and creators, or because they also have concerns about Joe Rogan and other misinformation or whatever on Spotify, in which case that's a big deal and that's a problem. Or would it turn out that actually 87 people will actually get round to cancelling their subscriptions, and really, even if they lose some content, they're not actually going to lose any subscribers and therefore any money. So we don't actually know that. And as you say, when asked in an investor call this week, which was happening anyway, Daniel Ek said, too soon to say, it will take months for us to see the impact, was what he said, which may or may not be true. But hey, we're not here to talk about this week. We talked about this last week. We're not here to talk about Young v. Rogan and the Spotify boycott. We're here to talk about much more interesting things.
Yeah, later on we'll be discussing Lil Yachty's accusations that an NFT company didn't get his permission before launching, with claims that he was involved in the project. But first, and you might see a theme forming here, a company called Hippie sparked controversy last week and eventually took its website offline after it appeared to be selling NFTs related to a plethora of musicians without permission. The company was claiming to offer a fun experience in the metaverse for music fans and a new revenue stream for artists and owners, although artists and their managers and their labels all seem to agree that the main thing Hitpiece was involved in was some good old-fashioned copyright infringement.
Now, it's not 100% clear what this website Hitpiece was actually selling, and as you've mentioned, since the backlash began last week, the website's actually gone down, so we can't go in there and dig. Once the website was gone, it was replaced with a very simple statement that said, "We started the conversation and we're listening." However, we do have the official pitch of the original website, which was on its social media, for example. And so basically what Hitpiece was saying was, it was allowing people to buy one of one NFTs of all your favorite songs. Own a song, build your unique playlist, and join an artist's community.
Now, in an interview with Billboard, a spokesperson insisted that the company is not and has never intended to sell anyone's copyright-protected music. Rather, they said in this statement, Hitpiece allows users to create a digital display of album artwork associated with their favourite music with a one-of-a-kind non-fungible token of the artwork. Now, obviously, that's still a problem, because even if Hitpiece isn't selling music, it does appear in that statement to admit that it's selling the artwork associated with the music. An artwork, like songs and recordings, is protected by copyright. And usually in music, a label would own or at least control the copyright in the artwork. And it doesn't appear that anyone at Hitpiece actually thought to ask any of the labels for permission to grab all of that artwork and post it on its website. Actually, it appears that it launched its website full of track data and accompanying artwork by pulling it all in through Spotify's API. Still, on a recent edition of the Business Builders podcast, one of Hitpiece's co-founders, Rory Felton, said that the idea was that artists would get royalties from not only the initial NFT auction, but also every time that NFT is traded. So it becomes a perpetual revenue stream for artists and rights holders.
Except, of course, as nice as that sounds, who wouldn't want a perpetual revenue stream? But you'd usually go to the artists and their labels and their managers first, before setting up a website like this and asking them, would you be interested in making money in this way? If only because, I mean, even if they're interested, you need to know, well, how much money are artists expecting from something like this? And once you're making some money, how are you going to pay those artists? But it seems that Hitpiece didn't do any of that. And in that conversation that a spokesperson from the company was having with Billboard, well, this was quite an interesting thing that they said. Participants in Hitpiece will be paid a royalty on the sale of their authorized NFTs. The ability of artists or owners to be paid is a functionality that Hitpiece is developing.
Yeah.
It's good they've got that on the to-do list. Those who participate in Hitpiece will provide information so that it can be paid by our third-party payment provider.
So they've got a payment provider, just not a way of getting payments from Hitpiece to that provider to the artists.
They've been busy. They've got stuff to do.
I suppose, yeah, you know, there's a lot of things to do. They had a website to launch and take down again. Anyway, so Hitpiece actually launched in December, but this all became newsworthy last week because artists and labels started to spot that their music and artwork was on the Hitpiece website. And then they started shouting about it on social media, which led to more artists and labels checking out the website, finding their music and artwork on there and shouting about it even louder. And needless to say, people quickly started talking about legal action, or at least cease and desist notices. The band Eve Six posted their cease and desist onto social media, telling Hitpiece to, and I quote, "cease and desist, motherfuckers."
So that was Hitpiece told.
And as all that online outrage started to build, Hitpiece itself went on Twitter on Wednesday to say, "Clearly, we have struck a nerve and are very eager to create the ideal experience for music fans. To be clear, artists get paid when digital goods are sold on Hitpiece. Like all beta products, we are continuing to listen to all user feedback and are committed to evolving the product to fit the needs of artists, labels, and fans alike." And again, while that all sounds positive, it would have been a good idea to actually speak to the musicians and labels and managers before putting all this live. I mean, there have been other digital services that went down the launch now, ask for forgiveness later route, but in most cases, that has not worked.
Now, Hitpiece might be hoping that by going offline this week, it can avoid any particularly big lawsuits, despite all of that litigation being threatened online. It has also been stressing that the site was only ever in beta and it hasn't actually sold anything as yet. However, as we've already said, it did have all of that artwork on its website, which it seemingly pulled out of Spotify. It posted it all. It was, you know, putting copy around all that artwork, implying that people could buy all of these NFTs, which means at the very least it was infringing the copyright in all of that artwork by copying it and putting it on its website and displaying it. And of course, under US copyright law, if you can show that copyright infringement was willful, you can sue for $150,000 per infringement for a concept called statutory damages, and that is oblivious to whether or not the infringer i.e. Hitpiece, made any money at all as a result of their infringing activity. In addition to labels potentially going legal on the argument that the copyright in the artwork that they own or control was infringed, could artists also take legal action? Certainly some artists were threatening this as well on social media. Now, as no actual music was being made available in terms of songs and recordings, then there's no rights being exploited there. The labels probably own or control the artistic works, the illustrations and photography contained within the artwork. Although, it's possible that artists themselves could possibly sue for things like trademark infringement, or in some countries, there's these things called publicity rights. Quite what artists could do would depend on the country in which they live and are based, although obviously most of this is happening in the US, and there are so-called publicity rights that artists have in various states in the US. So yeah, it could be that, I mean, it may be that people figure that these guys haven't got any money anyway, so what's the point in suing them? But I don't know, maybe behind the scenes they do. So we could
That's it. The founders of this, I mean, in their own profiles, which Billboard did cover, they do claim to have been involved in a lot of billion-dollar companies. So it might be worth a try.
So why not? So we could well see a load of labels suing for copyright infringement because of the artwork that they were displaying, and then maybe some artists suing for things like trademark infringement or enforcing their publicity rights. I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe this could become a new slot in the CMU Daily, because, I mean, so many artists were up there. So much artwork was up there. I mean, it sort of feels like most artists and most labels could probably take legal action if they wanted to.
Yes, so that could be a bit of a problem for Hitpiece. The other thing Hitpiece now has to decide is whether, I mean, it says it's listening to its critics. We'll see, but I mean, they've got to now decide whether they want to forge ahead with this and try to get musicians and labels on board with the project, which, I mean, it's quite possibly too late for that now. I mean, so much ill will and bad press surrounding this company that so far hasn't actually done anything. But I think it might be that this is just a venture that is doomed to become an example of how not to launch a company in business lectures.
Another quick aside on all of this, in addition to the controversy around this website launching without getting anybody's permission, and the potential of litigation that may well follow, the whole thing also sparked another round of NFT chatter among the music community, with some people not only laying in to how these guys have gone around launching their website, but laying into the concept of the website to start with. Because, of course, given their insistence that no actual music files were going to be part of these NFT sales, so all you're going to get is some artwork linked to an NFT. But, I mean, even if they'd done that legit and they'd licensed all of that artwork, no label is going to be actually selling the rights in the artwork as part of these NFT drops. So it seems that if this whole thing goes live, or had gone live, if we're assuming it's probably now dead in the water, but it seems, now we can't check this because the website's gone down, but it seems that the proposition was that, okay, yes, there is a JPEG of artwork attached to the NFT, but I mean, as lots of NFT critics have pointed out over the last year, if you really want a JPEG of any album or singles artwork, go to Amazon and use the good old right click. So, yeah. I mean, that's not very difficult to get hold of. So it sort of feels like actually what the proposition was, we may have got this wrong, but this is my understanding of it from what I have seen. Basically, the proposition was that you would spend some money on an NFT, and by buying the NFT, you would own the right to say that you owned, in inverted commas, a certain track or song within the Hitpiece community, an ecosystem and platform, even though you don't actually own anything other than the right to say that you own something that you don't really own. So that seemed to be the proposition. But as we've discussed before on Setlist, actually, in a way, plenty of successful legit NFT drops that we've seen over the last year are kind of sort of selling that. I mean, we've talked before about how a lot of music NFTs are not actually attached to a piece of music content because of all the licensing issues. They're attached to some sort of visual content. But again, you don't actually own that visual content. You just have the file, and then you have some sort of exclusive attachment to the file. And then that exclusive attachment is logged for everyone to see in the token on the blockchain. It's all about selling bragging rights. And while famous NFT cynics, like, I don't know, maybe Andy Malt, for example, would probably say that that's just bullshit, there are some people who reckon that actually, for some artists and some fan bases, there is an appetite for that sort of thing, providing it's done in a legit licensed artist-endorsed way, and that that could become a product that allows artists to make some money and for fans to feel like they have a better attachment to artists down the line. So I think we're right to be critical of the way Hitpiece went about launching. But whether or not you're right to be critical of the actual proposition depends on your view on NFTs in general. But maybe there is an opportunity here that artists should be paying attention to.
Yeah, well, maybe, but probably not on Hitpiece. And finally, on this edition of Setlist, we just discussed the importance of speaking to artists before putting their faces on your newfangled NFT product. But just speaking to them isn't enough. You also need to make absolutely sure that they're aware of what you're doing. This is something discovered recently by Opulous, the music NFT startup launched by the founders of Ditto Music, after Lil Yachty accused it of using his name and brand as part of its launch communications, even though he had not agreed to get involved with the venture. We should add that Opulous is certain it did make sure Lil Yachty was aware of what it was doing, but the rapper nonetheless disagrees.
Yeah, so Opulous is another music-centric NFTs and blockchain venture. Its main NFT thing to date is a fan funding product that allows investors and fans to pledge money to an artist linked to an upcoming track from that artist. And then by getting a connection to that artist and that track through an NFT, they get a royalty right. They get to share in any royalties that are subsequently generated by that track. So it's a little bit like the fan funding products of old in the early days of digital music, except that the royalty right, the connection to the track for the buyer, is logged on the blockchain, and then Ditto Music, because they have founders in common, will actually distribute any music that comes out of that and make sure that the NFT buyer with the royalty right gets the royalties they are due. Regular listeners may remember that we actually did talk about Opulous once before, because as part of their launch last year, they did a partnership with an online investments platform in the US called Republic, which really pissed off Republic Records owner Universal Music, who didn't really want another Republic company doing things in the music space. Now, this Opulous fan funding service properly launched last year with an NFT drop involving Lil Pump and Soulja Boy. However, prior to that, in some pre-launch communications, the startup identified Lil Yachty as an artist who was set to be involved in the venture.
So in a lawsuit filed last month, the rapper claimed that while he and his management team had had meetings with Opulous founder Lee Parsons and its chief marketing officer Fernando Cruz in May last year, they never actually signed up to work with or endorse the NFT startup. The lawsuit says that Lil Yachty's management met with Parsons and Cruz on the 24th of May last year, and that another virtual meeting involving the rapper himself took place the next day, but, he insists, both of those were a general introductory meeting wherein defendants generally pitched the Opulous platform. No agreement or deal terms for plaintiff's involvement were ever reached, and that there were no further communications between the parties, and accordingly, no agreement or deal terms for plaintiff's involvement in the defendant's launch of the Opulous platform was ever reached. Then in June last year, the lawsuit claims, a press and social media campaign was launched by Opulous falsely representing that plaintiff Lil Yachty was affiliated, connected and associated with the Opulous platform, and further falsely representing that plaintiff's copyright works would be offered for sale through the Opulous platform.
Alongside the press announcement and the other social media activity, around about that time, Music Business Worldwide published an article which, And again, we're still quoting from a lawsuit here. This article in MBW contained numerous statements made by Lee Parsons, both falsely representing plaintiff's affiliation and involvement with the Opulous platform, as well as touting the significance to the Opulous platform of having an artist as high profile and respective as plaintiff involved with the launch of Opulous's copyright NFT offerings. So the press statement and the social media stuff and that article and various other things that happened around the same time. All of that, said the lawsuit, constituted, we'll list for you here, it constituted trademark infringement, unfair competition, and it infringed Little Yachty's privacy and publicity rights.
Now, did Opulous see all this and, like Hitpiece, immediately pull down its website and make fawning statements about how it was listening? No, it did not. The company responded to the rapper's legal claims by saying that they are meritless and that it will defend itself vigorously. In a short statement responding to Little Yachty's lawsuit last week, the firm said, "Contrary to the assertions in the complaint filed by Little Yachty, Opulous's use of Little Yachty's name and likeness were all authorised by Little Yachty and his representatives. We intend to rigorously defend ourselves against these meritless claims." Well, we look forward to seeing that vigorous defence in full.
Yeah, I have a feeling that if you're a CMU Daily subscriber, we're going to be having quite a few NFT legal battles, lawsuits, cease and desist things going on in the months ahead. Although I did notice on social media late last week that Opulous has just appointed a new head of legal, so at least she's got something to do on her first day at work. So there's an upside there.
We're entering a golden age of NFT litigation.
Yeah, maybe we need to reposition Setlist as the weekly NFT litigation website. There's probably a bigger audience for that. And, you know, if ultimately we're forced to pull this podcast off Spotify, because, I don't know, maybe we find some morals over the next week. We won't. We'll still be on Spotify. But if we pull off Spotify, we'll need to find a bigger audience somewhere else. And maybe NFT litigation is the future for Setlist.
Maybe. That's something to look forward to, isn't it? Anyway, before we get any further into that conversation, that is all we've got time for on this edition to Setlist. I'm closing this down now. But if you want to know anything more about anything we've discussed this week, you want to check out the show notes, because in there we've got links to more information on everything we've discussed this week. You can find those at setlistpodcast.com or in your podcast player right now. Don't forget to subscribe while you're looking at that podcast player if you haven't already. Rate and review if you can, that'd be nice. And if you've got anything you want to say to us, email us, setlist@unlimitedmedia.co.uk. Setlist is the music business podcast from CMU. It's presented by Andy Morton, Chris Cook. And for more on CMU, go to completemusicupdate.com.